Just prominently on the. Thank you for that important note. Posting written notice prominently on the bulletin board in the office of the Board of Education, 65 McCampbell Road, Homedale, New Jersey, the district's website, and sent to four district schools. The mailing and or hand delivery of said notice to the designated newspapers, Asbury Park Press, Independent, PLG, PSG, PSA, PTSO, SAB presidents, and student representatives to the board, filing with the clerk of Homedale Township, police headquarters, and the public library. Meetings of the board are open to the public, and all members of the community should feel free to participate. There are two opportunities for the public to speak. First is at the beginning of the meeting for agenda items only, and the second is at the end of the meeting for any other items. Any individual desiring to speak shall give his or her name, address, and the group, if any, that is represented. Presentation shall be brief as possible, no more than 3 minutes per individual. There are certain matters that may be brought before the board that cannot be immediately addressed in public. Such matters may be referred by the president to the board committee and or the superintendent for consideration and or resolution. Board vests in its president or other presiding officer authority to terminate the remarks of any individual if he or she deems in the best interest of those present to do so. Michael, could we do a roll call, please?
Ms. Flynn is absent. Mr. Sokol?
Here.
Mr. Reddy?
Here.
Mrs. Bramani?
Here.
Mr. Wall?
Here.
Mr. Foster is absent. Mr. Hammer is absent. Mrs. Urbanski?
Here.
Mrs. Zhang?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Flag salute. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We have one presentation for this evening that is going to be led by Dr. Charney. He's going to be doing a presentation involving data related to recent testing. Jeff, you ready to go? Perfect.
Oh, no, I'm good. Everybody hear me okay? Good evening, board members and the public. Tonight, we will be giving you a brief presentation on our test results. This is a state mandate. Every year at this time, we need to show you progress of our students. We will be segmenting this. Ms. Denise Rubel will be talking about our Start Strong results, as well as DLM and what's the other piece? Start Strong and Ms. Faris will be doing our Access or our English Language Learner presentation. So let's get to it, and I will actually be presenting our AP and SAT scores.
Okay, so I'm just going to begin. Good evening, everyone. My name is Denise Rubel. I'm going to present an overview for you of the New Jersey Start Strong assessments. So a couple of things to know as we take a look at this data. The Start Strong assessments were created in response to COVID-19. There was disruption and instruction and a lot of
these assessments were created in response to that, to get some information about how our students were being impacted or potentially impacted at this time. We've got a little repeat of ourselves here. Steve, can you back that up for me? It's not, thank you. Okay, so the New Jersey Start Strong assessments provide a snapshot of the amount of support a student is likely to need. Now, it's important to keep in mind that these assessments come from what we call a deficit model. This is talking about identifying students who need support and to what degree they might need that support. So it's important to keep that in mind. That's different from other assessments we give in terms of, let's say, MAP, which would be identifying a student's ready to learn level. This is not meant to be the only indicator. It is not meant to replace any other methods of assessing our students and tracking their growth and development. It is meant to be a supplemental piece of information. So a couple important things to keep in mind. Steve, could I ask you to? Okay, so this first slide represents our students in grades 4 through 10 who took the New Jersey Start Strong assessment in the area of ELA. Okay, so just for everyone's benefits, the green represents students who, as a result of this testing, it would suggest they need less support. The yellow, it would be suggesting based on this assessment that they need some support, leaving the red with suggesting that these students need strong support. And so looking at this data, we see that our current freshmen performed really strongly. So when we say starting strong, our current freshmen are demonstrating that they've come into us and they are starting strong. We have some other grade levels, and we'll talk in a little bit about what the next steps are. Where we see some greater numbers of students who need support. And so we'll talk about what we'll be doing to address that. Steve? Okay, so this is the math. Now, a couple things when you look at this, the first three bars represent our students at Indian Hill, so grades 4, 5, and 6. The next five bars represent all of our students at SATS who took this, who took a math assessment. Because we remember, we would have students in math 7, we would have students in math 8, we would have students in algebra 1, we would have students in geometry, and we would have 7th graders in algebra 1 and 8th graders in algebra 1, and that all gets reported as separate math classes. So understand what you're seeing here. So again, the reminder, green, representing, as based on the assessment, our students who would need less support going into this subject area, this grade level. Yellow would be representing our students based on this assessment who would appear to need more support. And then obviously the red being our students that would appear to need the strongest support going into those current grade levels or those current math classes. Okay, next. Okay, so this is the science. Now, science is a little bit tricky. So we have science 6, 9, and 12. Remember that this assessment was created in response to COVID. Part of that was to get some information to help us instructionally, but it was also to meet federal requirement. And so No Child Left Behind, with the mandates for the assessment, required that we have students complete the science assessment this fall. So we see our performances for our students in 6th grade, 9th grade, and 12th grade. The one thing I want to point out here, remember again, green less, yellow some, red strong. What I do want to point out is for our 12th graders, not all 12th graders, all 12th graders took the assessment. Not all 12th graders are currently in a science class. So that's important to know when you're looking at that information. They all had to take it, but they may not all be enrolled in a science class. Okay, Steve? Later this month, well, I should actually probably clarify, but between the end of this month and the winter break, we'll be expecting to receive from the state the reports that will go home to parents, and then we'll be able to prepare those to to get out to the public. So we just wanted to show what an example would look like. And so Steve, if you can open that page one. Okay, so this is just the cover page for the assessment. Again, it's just going to give you some information about the about your student, your child, and how they performed. And it's going to basically tell you that what does this result suggest? Does it suggest that there's less support needed, some support needed, strong support needed? Okay, could you go into the next one? The next one breaks it down a little bit more for you because it said, okay, how did my student perform on the concepts that were reported? So this digs in a little bit more into actually what that data is telling us. And then it's presenting that, you know, to the parents as well. But it's showing on a scale where it looks like that child was falling in terms of the key skills and the concepts for that assessment. Perfect. Okay, so the next steps. The next steps will be to corroborate this data with additional data for those students that are in the MAP grades with the MAP testing, those students who are in the Linkit testing grades with the Linkit benchmark assessments, with our students participating in the iReady Math pilot, grades 4 to 6, with the iReady Math diagnostic, and with any other grade level benchmarks or assessments that we give in the district. So we talk about taking a look at that data and seeing what does the bigger picture show. No one piece tells the whole story. And so we look at all of the data that's available and we make decisions based on that about support that students need. Again, we'll be notifying the parents through what will be called an individual student report. I kept getting that mixed up earlier today because we have a support system that's called INRS and that's an ISR, so to keep my letters straight. But those reports will come home. We expect to get them in district later this month before that winter holiday. And so we'll prepare those to go home to parents. We'll also be, back up one just, thank you. Back up two, perfect. We'll also be working, and I say we have already begun working to identify students who need important support through our INRS teams. So again, there are teams of people in each building whose job it is to come together and look at student needs and to make a collective decision about what is best for students and to make a plan with a goal for helping everyone together achieve that with the student, okay? And so we've begun to identify students to be supported through that process, and that work will continue. As part of that, we will continue to set up supplemental before, during, and after school support. And so you may hear some of those kinds of terms, period zero, extended day, and those are the names that we give these additional supports that can occur at these different times. We'll continue to track student growth through many district measures. That'll include standardized assessments. That'll also include local assessments, again, so that we get a complete picture of a student's progress, of a student's growth, right, and achievement. And then we'll continue to utilize additional curricular resources to support our teachers and to support our students as they go through this this school year. I can't believe we're already in November. That's so hard to believe. And I think that's everything, Steve. I think that is everything for Start Strong. Again, summarizing the tests that were given, the things that we will be looking to do, the next steps for that. I think.
Any questions about that? Can we hold all questions to the end of the presentation? Thank you.
So Access for ELLs is a test that our students that are already identified in the English Learner program, they take this test every spring. It is a state to state test that assesses comprehension and communication skills, language acquisition in English. Steve, you can, thank you. This is a test that's administered to kindergarten through 12th grade students, and again, that have already been identified as English language learners. It's given annually, and it meets all US federal requirements. It's anchored in the WIDA English Language Development Standards, which WIDA, it stands for World-Class Instructional Design and Assessment. And it's a consortium of multi-state organization that basically handles all of the standards and best practices, design and implementation of English learner standards and educational opportunities. It assesses the four language domains, mainly listening, speaking, reading, and writing. So an individual student's results on access for ELLs are reported as scale scores. And the four language domains, as I just mentioned, are listening, speaking, reading, and writing. However, they also report out in composite scores. The scale scores and proficiency levels are also reported in these combination composite scores. They are known as oral language, which is comprised of listening and speaking, literacy, which is reading and writing, comprehension, which is listening and reading, and then an overall composite score, which is a combination of all four of those domains. The overall composite score is the score that determines entry and exit into the ESL program. This is what a sample student report looks like. As you can see, it's color-coded, it's intuitive. The most important thing would be that they also break down the percentages for parents. This report went home in August to all of our English learners, and it usually, the score results always come back in August, and we send these home. So it'll break down what the percentages of the reading and writing and the speaking and listening are, and the composite scores, and then it also gives their overall score, which is what we use in the state of New Jersey to determine exit. So looking at this chart, this is our five-year composite score trend. The mean in 2020 is close to student exit expectations. In New Jersey, you need a 4.5 to exit. Our mean score was 4.3. Students were in person for our ESL program and showed good progress, with approximately a third of our students exiting the program this year. Please note that our sample size is rather small, which is what prevents us from disaggregating the data further. This year, last year, 2021, we had 35 students overall in the ESL program, K through 12. As I stated earlier, in New Jersey, a student needs a composite score of a 4.5 to be eligible for exit. We were able to exit 9 students this past year based on these access scores, which is 31% of the students enrolled in the ESL program. And as you can tell, fluctuations in enrollment happen from year to year with our ESL program, and that's due to exits, graduations, new students entering the district as well, which happens at all points in the school year. Thank you.
If I could just add to the ELL piece, we do feel that we can get up to 3/4 of our students exiting the program in a very short time period. I was in a second grade class today, and there were 3 ELL students, and they were working very hard with the teacher and understanding reading concepts. So I think it looks very positive for us going forward with our ELL population, be it small, but important. So at this time, I'd like Ms. Werbel to do the dynamic learning maps.
Okay, so the dynamic learning maps, which we'll probably continue to refer to now as DLM. Okay, so the dynamic learning maps, they're for students with the most significant cognitive disabilities for whom the general state assessments are inappropriate. So we have students with IEPs who are exempt from the state testing, and in lieu of NJSLA testing, and in lieu of testing, take alternate assessments, DLM, dynamic learning maps. It offers these students an opportunity to show what they know and to be able to compare that to their peers in a way that they can demonstrate what they've learned, what they can do. So this is the graph for the 2020 2021 DLM results for ELA and mathematics. Blue bar representing ELA, red representing mathematics. Important to understand that this is an N of 16, okay? And so it is reported in the emerging, approaching, at, or advanced. And so when we look at this, we see that even though we have a small cohort, 75% of our students are in the approaching, at, and advanced. Certainly, we will be looking to support our students in emerging, approaching, at, to be able to grow and develop to meet those expectations. And this is just an additional slide to just explain how DLM identifies what's considered emerging, what's considered approaching, what's considered at target, what's considered advanced. And it, you know, when you read them, it's primarily the same. It just talks about, if you talk about level of rigor.
Okay. Would you mind going over that slide one more time? I have difficulty understanding what that was trying to tell us.
Sure. So of 16 students, though we have students who took the ELA, let's start with that, which is the blue bar. And of the 16, the number of students who were emerging, and then we say the number of students in the blue who were approaching. I'm just going
to sure. And can you just define emerging as it relates to this project?
Absolutely. I'm going to do this just to say to talk about the number of students from 16 emerging, the number of students from 16 approaching, the number of students at, the number of students today. Language here, but how they define the level of proficiency or the level of rigor for that piece of assessment.
And can you define target, or did you already? What's the definition of target in this context?
Would be, Steve, can you go back?
Sure.
So I know I don't have a specific, I know that it would be what the data points were. So it's a combination of data points for ELA. And again, I'm not sure, although it's something we certainly can check on what that specific.
Right, because if it says approaching target or at target, it would be approaching what, at what?
So I can you add a little light on this. So for example, our emerging is in a taxonomic sense, just an understanding.
I'm sorry, what's that word?
Taxonomic means a level of education. So if that student is emerging, they understand the concepts, but they have difficulty applying the concepts. Approaching does say they can apply the concepts that they learn, and then it's progressive at target. They're able to not only apply, they're able to, for example, make analogies, have a conceptual understanding. So it implies a higher level of understanding and performance, application. All these are different gradations of really educability is what it is.
Thank you for that. Can you just define target though? I'm sorry, I'm just still trying to understand the definition of target.
JSLA standards. So for each of those standards, that would be the target. So the DLM has their own set of standards that are very similar to NJSLA. So if it's, you know, textual evidence or something of that nature, that would be the target. And then if the student is able to do it at what level?
So it is a number out of all the testing questions that the learner has to go through. That's what your point. I'm not sure if that number fluctuates.
It does depend on the population, but this is a test that we have to administer for students that don't have the cognitive ability to really get a good, reliable score from our other assessments and state assessments. And it's one we administer every spring.
I just want to say, I think it's fantastic. I just want to make sure that we understand clearly what the definitions are attached to what you're doing.
Fair enough question. Okay, can we hop to our AP exams? So as the board knows, we have an extensive AP program. Our AP tests are valid predictors of success in freshman year at college. We, for this district of this size, we actually administer over and above the average number of APs in terms of offerings. So we can go to the next slide. And what we've done here for you is we've crunched the data by course. The red line represents the state mean of New Jersey. The blue bars are for each course. Of the 13, of the number of tests, we had 13 that were below the state mean. Although our overall mean is equal to the state, this was disconcerting data. Four-fifths of our language exams were below the mean. Seven-ninths of our science and math exams were below the mean. About a one-quarter of our humanities, both social studies and ELA, were below the mean. Our arts, actually, both courses that we teach were above the mean. The next slide.
Jeff, could I ask a question on that?
Yeah.
On the slide before that, the one you were just on, that one, yeah. You don't have to do it now, but is it possible the board can, when we get this, what those blue bars represent, for example, you know, AP calculus, whatever, that blue bar represents 14 kids, two kids, you know, I guess number of test takers, I guess, would that be?
Yeah, I can get that. I've showed the CNI committee that data, certainly can get the board that data.
It would just be interesting just to see, because obviously in some classes, you know, you might have three or four kids, where other classes, you know, everyone takes a macro or whatever, the, you know, AP English, whatever it is. Okay, thank
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. I can get that data to the board.
Just paint a better picture or a more comprehensive picture, I think, for me at least. Thanks.
Okay. So participation is actually another measure of AP success. Our participation actually went down a little bit, about 4 or 5% in our last year of testing relative to the previous couple years. It's about 70%. This shows you an overall graphic of that we had courses where students participated fully. So for these measures, we had 100% participation. In six tests, we had 80% or above. Five tests, we had about 75%. And about seven of these tests, we had less than 75%. A district such as Homedale really should be aiming for 90 plus percent participation. And that's a goal that we want to achieve. So what are we going to do about it? Already the board is aware that we've changed the GPA for students that take AP. It's now worth 5.5 credits versus honors, which is a 0.5 less. So students that take AP courses, we recognize the rigor, and we'd like to award them with an appropriate GPA. Many districts do this. I think we also have to impart greater recognition to students that take this rigorous program. So I think concerted efforts to recognize students that achieve AP Scholar with distinction, I think we need to start recognizing them at graduation, senior walk. My ideas, I've been working with the principal and the vice principal at the high school. We like to sponsor things, soft skills, soft things like AP breakfast or AP luncheon after students take these rigorous exams. We have students that take 6, 7, and 8 AP courses, and that's sizable. So I think the district needs to recognize students and their achievements. And so these are what I call soft approaches, but our hard approach really will award them more credit for taking these exams. Next slide is our SAT assessments. This is data presented for years 2019 through 2021. Blue represents 2019, red 2020, and the last year's 2021 in yellow. D is our district data, S is the state datum. And so those students in our last 3 years of SATs that met proficiency in both math and English reading and writing hovered about 70, it's a small drop, about 75% from last year's data, but it was relatively stable. In our ERW, we did very well. So about 92% last year met benchmark. That was pretty stable. In math, we have a little bit more work to do. It hovered around the mid-70s. For a district like this, it probably should be the mid-80s. We actually did achieve that in math in 2020, two years ago. Okay, next slide. This shows you where our students fall in the range of scores. So SATs are scored up to 1600. Unfortunately, we had a sizable drop in these areas in our 1000 to 1190, which is in the upper average of SAT performance. We dropped from 2019 to 21 by about 15%. In the 1200 to 1390 tier, which is really upper proficiencies, we dropped about 21 points. And in our highest tier, 1400 to 1600, we dropped by a half. So I think this data does show that we did suffer from the pandemic. These scores certainly don't reflect the ability of students in the district. We are cognizant of it, and I shared with the board, as well as the C&I committee, some of the steps that we'd like to go forward with. And that would be inclusive of in-school academic centers, which we're working on at the high school, that would provide ongoing every period support for students as well as in unit lunch that need this augmenting of their skill set. So that I'm hopeful about. I'm hopeful that just kids being in class in person, just anecdotally, teachers report it's much different. So I hope to these scores will be, we'll see a substantial rise next year.
Dr. Shine, I have
Jeff,
a question.
I only see, if you add up the 2021 bars, it comes up to 66%. Shouldn't that total 100%, like the red bars totals 100? And then I think if I quickly look at the blue bars, looks like that's pretty close to 100 as well.
Well, are you counting the lower scores? I gave you we didn't have any representation in 400 to 590.
Right, that's what I figured.
We had some representation of 600 to 790. I'm not positive that everyone is represented there. I get the scores in cache files that I have to disaggregate, but this is certainly the large percentage of them. I may not have gotten all the scores of last year as yet, but since we have 3 to 4 administrations of SAT, I get them whenever they're released. So I can certainly look into that.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you had a question.
Yeah, so almost all colleges, this application cycle are test optional, meaning you don't have to submit an SAT. Could that be a reason why there's a drop in the scores?
Well, you ask a great question. I think colleges are reconsidering the importance of these tests, particularly SATs, as a measure of student ability. Again, it's a high stakes, one shot deal. Not every student is going to be as test savvy as others. So I think that it's a positive step that schools are considering more reliable mechanisms of student performance. Those don't necessarily have to be tests. That certainly can play out in our understanding of why our scores have dropped. Yeah.
I have questions about earlier parts of sure. the presentation. If you could go back to the Start Strong math slide, if that's possible.
Yeah, that's either the third or fourth one, I think.
I mean, I want to look at math and science, actually. So whichever one you get to first. Okay, science. Oh, go back. We'll do science first. Because I understand Mrs. Burble explained that perhaps the fact that some of the 12th graders are not taking science might be one of the reasons why, might play into some of the reasons why a third of the students are not need support. But what about ninth grade, which we have 65% of the students need strong or some support? Is there any explanation for that? And my second part of the question is, if more than half, if 65% of the students need some level of support in science, I totally support your idea of doing enrichment and targeting students and doing before and after school help and help during lunch. But if the percentage is that large, should we be doing something targeted in the classroom for the science scores?
Well, first of all, let me explain. Science 12, since it doesn't represent every student in the high school had to take the test. Most the students that did not take it probably are not science oriented. They probably don't choose to take science. So I'm not convinced that the scores are totally reliable. What we often find with the science assessment, which has been given every year to juniors, for example, that they do not take it seriously, and I'm not at all offering this as an excuse, but since it doesn't count for a grade or graduation requirement, or even schools, colleges don't see it, their attitude is, let's say, lethargic about it. We are looking at infusing more next generation science standards in our entire science curriculum. This test does measure NGSS, science practices, as well as content. And that's something that goes from one course to the next. It's not isolated in any one science. So that may take a number of years to really infuse in a valid way in our science program. When you get these results, you'll see how the students scored in terms of science practices, understanding science, being able to make an argument backed with evidence. The subscores, I think, are very important. We're just seeing a terminal score here. So it's data without meaning. I think the individual student reports will be very helpful to parents.
Okay, can we look at the math slide?
Math slide.
I understand why, for, I mean, we've discussed in committee why, for example, the SATS geometry is high because it's a pre-selected group of students who are already in that. But I'm just concerned about Algebra 1 in the high school, which 66.
It's what is it? About 92%.
92% of the students need support or strong support. And again, is there some kind of reinforcement in the classroom that's helping these struggling students, or what are we doing for them? For that and for about Math 8 and, you know, the ones that are very extreme, I think it's a majority rather than a minority of students who need extra support.
You've heard me say this before. I can't sugarcoat these results. They're very disconcerting. Our first step is really to validate the results. So we're going to compare that to our Linkit benchmark, which is just taken. So we're going to compare that and see how they did relative to these. The second step is we really have to mobilize to meet the need. And I shared with you a new approach. I've been working with the principals in the middle school and the high school to really get ongoing academic centers. We are surveying teachers as to who would be interested in mail centers on an ongoing basis, particularly unit lunch. So that we can start really rescuing this. I mean, cognitively speaking, let's think about it. If you haven't done math for 18 months, and you have done some, of course, we've run remote classes, but we know that doesn't work well. If you haven't done math for 18 months, it's going to be daunting. And so what I hear anecdotally from teachers is, kids don't even know how to start a problem. They look at it in confusion. That's not everybody, but it's a good portion. So after the teacher works with them and gives them math sentence stems that get them thinking, chunks the problem, then stuff starts to come back. But we are hearing reports in many of our courses, particularly our advanced courses, that we have to reteach the previous course to some degree. And in one course, we just actually finished the reteach of the foundations to the course. So we're starting the new material actually this week. So it gives you an idea of the severity of the problem. And I will say that my colleagues in other districts are finding the same results. It's an alarming result, but it's one that can't be totally be unexpected.
Okay, thank you. I also have one more, just a question, because you were saying the INRS teams were identifying the students. Just what is an INRS team? So if the parents are listening, they know what you're talking about.
So it stands for Intervention Referral Service. Every building has a team, which the first layer of identification is by the teacher that identifies students that are struggling with concepts. It's then referred to a committee, which reviews a number of different data, there are a number of steps. And this process can be very robust in identifying students in need. And then the sort of steps of rescuing that student, getting them help, not only during class, but if necessary, pulled out of class and in our supplemental services, that's all part of the process.
Okay, I know because I reported on last month that we're actively targeting children in the elementary in Indian Hill and Village, and it's really going forward, which is fantastic. And when are we going to be starting targeting the children in SATS in the high school?
Okay, so to your question, we have about 45 students in one elementary that we're helping before school and about 49 in the other elementary. And that's a good start, but we probably have about 200 that need more help. So
Can I just ask, have you asked the 200 children to do it, but only 45 are participating, or are you only doing it in groups?
No, we've let everybody know that.
So you've invited 200 students who need help, but only 45 are participating.
And that's going to be an endemic problem. You know, we can set up the most convenient and operationally sound mechanisms to help students. The elementaries will come, but nobody's going to show up to the party in the secondary schools. They just don't want to. They don't want to stay after school. They don't want to come before school. So we need to be cognizant of that. And that's why we have to have a new school academy that addresses that. This would be grant funded. That's what our ESSER grants target areas of learning loss. So we certainly can fund this. And so that's our next effort, to really recognize that that population of students is not typically, they don't self-advocate, they're not self-actualized. We got to cajole them, prod them, draft them into this program. And so we will be making a concerted effort, and you should hear more about that, to reach, and again, these are large numbers. So will it be staged? I'm not sure. We'll see who comes initially. If we need to expand the program, we'll certainly do that.
Okay, thank you.
So many AP classes and AP tests juniors and seniors take together. Was there a difference in like the number of, or like the percentage of juniors that participated and how they did versus the percentage of seniors that participated and how they did?
There's a statistically significant difference. So our juniors participated more, they scored better, they were more committed. That's an important difference. You probably know firsthand from your peers why our seniors decided they didn't need to show their best work. Now, part of the answer to that is we're offering freshmen for the first time an AP World History course. We're going to offer more opportunities for underclassmen to take AP tests, and that's going to meet the problem in a substantial way. We feel that particularly in our math program, where kids are exposed as early as sixth, seventh grade to challenging math, and they do well at it, that they could take a number of courses as freshmen that we offer. So that's a curricular sequence issue, and we're gonna try to meet that as best as we can. It's gonna take a number of years. Any other questions? Yes, Eileen.
So I know you had talked about possibly helping students during the unit lunch. Would that also be in consideration to look at study halls to see if we have large group of similar peers in study halls that we perhaps could address at that time as well?
Again, I've talked to the principals. We'd like to really reconfigure all the study halls. We don't feel that's in its present state academically helpful. We would like to offer options for students to work on material that they don't feel confident with, and that means stationing a teacher, let's say in math and ELA, or areas of need, so that teacher is available. But again, it has to, and this is what my appeal to parents tonight is, that please talk with your child if they're in need of help. We'd like them to be there. We will be there for them, but it takes a commitment for the student, and we need parent cooperation to attend to this concern. The concern is legitimate and it's dire. Some students have suffered as much as 2 years learning loss, according to the data that we have. They need help. It's not something that's going to be remedied overnight. It's something that with a concerted effort, and I'm talking about a good 6 to 8 months, maybe more, they can catch up to grade level. But it is a dire problem. And part of the data presentation, in terms of shock therapy, I'm hoping that the public will recognize the need to attend to this problem, because schools and even tutoring is not going to really be helpful. It's really schools that can solve the problem. So that's my appeal.
If I could just follow on to Board Member Bremonti and your comment, you mentioned twice dire and that it's a significant situation. I have a recommendation that I brought up in the past, but it ties to what some of the universities do, which is essentially having and it would frankly save parents a fortune in tutoring, is to have a tutoring hub or an educational hub all day long, mm-hmm. wherever, maybe it's there. And often students may or may not want to go to the extra instruction that's offered by their current teacher for a host of different reasons. So in this way, you have a different set of eyes, different set of perhaps knowledge, subject matter expertise, and have it become more of a comfortable, typical, readily available. Monmouth University is an example. You just go right in, it's there. And so is there, perhaps these would be the different committees, budget and finance and curriculum, the different committees, but why is it not then, if it's a dire, essentially you're saying it's an emergency. It's basically mm-hmm. education, that's a 911 call
yeah.
right now, in home now. If we had instructors, whether existing or retired or new hires, that created essentially a business in this business of education, so the children, while they're in school, the study hall have it recreated. You've already said it's a model that's not working. I'm using my words a little bit, but it's not working. And then the students may embrace it as a thing that they're enjoying and getting different sets of knowledge points during the day before it conflicts with extracurricular, whether it be arts or athletics or music and the different things that are going on. Is that a concept that you think makes sense?
Well, you called it,
or a version.
You said a hub, I say academic centers, and it's essentially, we're in agreement. The need is dire.
Sorry?
We okay. want teachers, we want at least two teachers on duty in every one of these centers on a rotating basis so that every period is covered and that at some point students feel, and what you're alluding to is a comfort level, they feel a comfort level to seek help. And again, we want to make them self-actualized enough to see their growth trajectory. And that's through our testing program, which is well established. We can measure student growth readily, and we do. But we need them to own it. We need them to own their own improvement.
And Board Member Urbanski, I'm sorry, I was speaking to it being perhaps in process, but I think part of it is unshackling the timeframes that you're not waiting for the teacher is available from 3 to 3:30 or 2 to, you go whenever you want. Is that the concept?
That's the concept.
Yeah. That's great.
So every period would be at least two teachers that would man. And again, we look forward to implementing that, and fingers crossed, but I do want to emphasize that we need the public's help. We need serious talking to students that need to meet these standards. This is a skill set where the foundation has to be well established in order for them to continue to learn, particularly in math. So we're looking at foundational concepts that need a lot of iteration.
Last question is, when was it planned to start? It sounds wonderful. Oh, you did?
No, I don't know if
you said process. Well, okay. When's the estimated start date?
Well, we put out a survey this week to all teachers. would they be willing to man our learning centers, in what period? It's a survey that they can choose a period. We will be paying them according to our practice of how we pay them. And we're trying to, it's a call for all boots on the ground, really. So I can't tell you how that's going since we just put out the survey, but we do expect some results of the survey next week. And then I'll work with the supervisors and the principals and how we schedule these centers. But I think you understand it precisely. That vision is one that we want in place and as soon as possible.
It's fantastic.
I just wanted to mention one other option that I don't know was discussed tonight, but we do also run extensive summer programs, and I know you were describing them, which really do sound phenomenal, but that you had really low attendance over the summer. So that's also another avenue and time frame that people could fit into their schedules. But I know you put together a great program, and it just seemed like it was poorly attended in past summers.
Yeah, that's our summer step up. We will continue to implement that for the next several years. We do have funding for it. We had a good showing. The committee, curriculum and instruction, has asked me to track that student growth, and we're working on it. We can identify those students and see what benefit they might have incurred from attending our summer academy. So those are all good ideas. It's going to be really around the clock, day after day, that we need to incorporate in this effort. But that's on the docket. Any other questions from the board?
One last question. Hopefully, I don't know if others have questions, but my main concern, Dr. Charney, is we're going to send a whole bunch of test results to parents out of the blue, and they're going to freak out.
Yeah.
And they're going to freak out because they're not being prepared for this. So I think we need to think about what our communications is going to be, our communication strategy mm-hmm. for parents. We've got to send something out ahead of time mm-hmm. to let them know this is coming. Your child may not, be in one of the preferred areas, and exactly everything you've just described. We're creating these academies and things of that nature. So, as a recommendation, it would be good if we start thinking from a communication standpoint about giving parents, so we give them a buffer. The other thing that I was going to ask, and I'm sure that you're going to do this anyways, but short of another test, it's difficult for us to know if we've made progress, I suspect. But it would be nice if there was some, I don't know if any metrics that you guys are going to be following over the next 6 months, 12 months, that you can keep the curriculum instruction committee basically up to speed as to what progresses we're making, how many people are taking the tutoring, how effective is the tutoring progress going. I think as a board, we would welcome in the next couple of months a follow-up report to give us a sense of these are things that are taking place, and we feel good that we're making some progress.
I would be happy to give that result to the board. I'm pretty confident that we're going to see. Unfortunately, when you do see results like this, there's a lot of room for growth. So I think we're going to see a big pop. It's hard to assign causality to it, but we do test frequently. We have our Linkit benchmarks 3 times a year. That the baseline was just completed last week, so our next testing will be in the winter, and I'll be able to provide a report to the committee on curriculum instruction as well as the board, because we will be avidly tracking this growth. We're concerned, we're interested, and the real goal is to get the student to own their own growth. And once they do that, then they'll take care of the initiative very willingly. So again, appeal to the public. And Mike, I appreciate your advice. The messaging is going to be critical, and I think we got to put it out.
To add to Mike's comment about the messaging, I think it's important when a parent gets this report to realize that there are a lot of children in this situation, 30, 25%, 35%, 40%. So it's not that they're a bad parent or the child isn't smart. It's just that we're in a bad situation and they're certainly not alone. And somehow the messaging should be explained that a large number of children are being invited for extra support and tutoring.
And that's an important statement. I can tell you just, you know, part of my responsibilities is to be in the classrooms. I'm doing a lot of observations. I'm at least in one classroom a day. And I can report to you that the students are a lot happier. They're happy to be in class. They form a community of practice. The learning is vibrant. There's great exchanges. There's great instruction that I've seen. So again, that's anecdotal, but I can't tell you a class that I've been in that hasn't been short of, you know, really exciting learning atmosphere. And I think you've heard those reports from the community. So it's real, it's there. And that's why I am confident that these scores will be mitigated in a very large way with our next assessment.
And for the parents who fully support you, I just want to say, how do they reach you? I just want to make sure, for the parents that hear you tonight and say, I fully support the board, superintendent, the work that you're doing, who do they call to understand it and understand the scheduling and share their support for you on that?
Certainly happy to talk to any parent.
How do they reach you? I just, because people listen to me.
It's good. It's jcharney@homedellschools.org. They certainly can reach out to the supervisor in the instructional area and or the principal. We're all allied in this effort, but we need public support. We do. Thank you.
So, Linda, you had a question?
Yeah, I do have questions. Regarding these reports, what I see is just look at the reports, you would say, okay, the problem started with the middle school and the high schools for specific, you know, this math class, the student performance is not that well, need a strong support. But think about it from long-term, I would think this already started probably in Indian Hill and maybe earlier than that. If we have like individual student reports from like a kindergarten to their middle school and high school, some per individual students, their development. Right. So in you don't see it from like a grade 4, grade 5, grade 6 there. But when they go to middle school, you see the problem show up. But they couldn't learn that, couldn't catch up. Maybe this is even in the early age. It just didn't show in the reports.
We're conscious of that. We have a new program, pilot program at Indian Hill. It's Ready Math. Lee and I have used that in other districts. It's transformational. It's turned schools that were in state focus around. Those schools that I'm thinking of are now high performing schools. That's why I asked the program to be integrated. And so we're piloting that. And we have when I go into classes, math classes at Indian Hill, I see all the good work of that program. There are math stations, there's small group work, there's mini lesson, there's games, a powerful tool in math understanding. So the format is ongoing, and it's I'm very pleased with how it's progressing. We should see very good results, but your point is well taken. You've got to go earlier. And so that program we've implemented with select classes in grades 4 through 6, and we're keeping a close eye on it. The teachers, when I talk to them, they say it's going very well. So that's all very positive.
Thank you. That's very good.
Thank you very much for a very frank report. And I appreciate that we're not trying to hide behind these numbers. We're going to take some steps to deal with them. Thank you very much. Thank you also to Alicia and Denise. We're now going to move over to a report from our student representatives. What do you want to tell us? What's going on in the schools?
So good evening. I hope everyone is doing well. Seniors are currently working on the regular decision college applications. For students who submitted their early action or early decision applications and would like to send in marking period one grades, a form to do so is now available in guidance. And it is recommended that you send in your marking period one grades if you performed well during the first marking period. Additionally, high school class councils decorated the hallways in preparation for Spirit Week today. Tomorrow is the first day of Spirit Week, tie-dye day, leading up to the battle of classes next Wednesday. We encourage every student to participate and sign up for the events for battle of the classes. Thank you, and I'll now hand it over to Trinity to conclude the student report.
Hello. The boys' cross-country team competed in the state tournament. Seniors Lewis Mejorada, Alec Mihalenko, and Haroon Sheikh placed 4th, 8th, and 9th individually in the NJ Group 2 Central Sectional Championship, thus leading the HHS team to a third-place finish. The team competed in the Group 2 Championship yesterday and placed 8th. We'd also like to recognize junior Alexander Shawl, who recently won the Golf Association of Lehigh Valley Junior Tour Fall Classic, as well as the HHS girls soccer team, who won the sectional championship. And as the fall sports season comes to a close, we sincerely congratulate all of the student athletes. It is amazing to have so many accomplished individuals in our Homedale High School community. And that concludes the student report. Thank you.
Hey,
thank
Mike.
You very much. Yes, Peter.
I'll add one thing for the kids there. The girls today won their semifinal group playoff game, which means on Sunday they play for the Group 2 state championship. So awesome news. The boys actually lost their sectional final game to Rumson in double overtime. So their journey ended the other day. But the girls, one more game, and they're state champions for the first time since 2014-15, if you remember back in the day.
Thanks for the update, Pete. ESPN no ready.
Hey, it's good.
Yeah. Thank you very much. So we have a report from the superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Sacco. First thing I want to mention is that we're doing pretty well in managing the COVID situation in the schools. The numbers were just posted today, and they continue to trend in a good direction. And I'm meeting with a assistant commissioner from the New Jersey Department of Education on Friday. And the purpose of that meeting, and I'll be with other superintendents, of course, will be to discuss the state's position on testing and quarantining. We're hopeful we'll get some guidance that's a little more specific and provides us with the opportunity that through testing, we might be able to reduce the length of some of the quarantines. But it's clear from the numbers that we've seen that quarantining is effective and necessary when we do have a case of COVID breakout within the school system. But you'll notice that from last week's numbers to this week's numbers, the number of students who are quarantined has dropped dramatically. So we continue to monitor that situation. As soon as we can get closer to back to normal, we will. And again, I'm hopeful that the meeting I'll be attending on Friday will take us a long way to gaining insight into how we can make things better for our students and our staff members. I think it would be wrong for me not to speak briefly as a follow-up to the test results that we received today. I think back to a little over a year ago, I came on board in July, and Dr. Charney came on board in August. And at that time, after a spring of virtual, we were telling you at that time, if I recall correctly, that we anticipated the recovery would take 12 to 18 months. And then we went through the 2021 school year, and many of us, including myself, thought that we'd be back to a full-time normal school day long before, well, we're still not there, but long before we got to the point where we are now. So I think we have to set clear expectations that the recovery from the pandemic is going to take some time. And I think the steps that Dr. Charney and our supervisors, and most importantly, our teachers are taking will be a positive step and tremendous support for our students to help close that gap, close that deficiency that occurred. But to Dr. Charney's point, I think it requires some emphasis. No one can do it alone. You know, our students cannot overcome this by themselves. Our teachers cannot overcome this deficiency by themselves. And I think back to a workshop I went to at Disney where they talked about the power of three. And I think in this situation, the power of three is really what we need. And we need our parents and our teachers and our students. I think to a degree, they're all working hard to get this done, but we need them to work together. And an example of that is we have the Step Up program that ran in the summer. We have tutoring going on now. We're establishing the learning hubs. And our teachers will work hard. But if the parents aren't encouraging their students to go there and work hard, it won't be successful. So we need a unified effort between our students, our parents of those students, and our teachers to make this successful. And by successful, I mean dramatically increase the achievement level of our students. I think it's very doable. I think the resources that we have and are applying to this situation are tremendous, but it really takes a clear understanding that our students need to be in these learning centers. Our students need to take advantage of the tutoring that we have before and after school. And next summer, let's be very clear on this, next summer we're going to have our students take advantage of the Step Up program. I think realistically, September of 22 is when we'll see us getting really back to normal, and I hope surpass what we've done in the past in Homedale. But we need to work together. And the one thing that we didn't mention, and I know we've discussed it, but I want to mention it tonight, is I think we need to encourage our students and make our parents aware that there are many opportunities to learn outside of the school day, outside of our teacher tutoring. It's not obviously my generation, but there are tremendous online resources. I like to putter around the house, so I go to YouTube and learn how to fix things, replace a faucet. You can go to YouTube and find out how to do some math problem you're struggling with. You can go to the Khan Academy and learn how to do some math process you're struggling with. In addition to what we're already doing, I think we need to find a way to encourage our students to take advantage of those online services. Again, it's not what I'm accustomed to, but from what everything I've seen with today's students, they are. And I think when we throw that into the mix and we have everybody working effectively, I think we'll be successful. And I use the term effectively because I believe everyone's working hard. Dr. Charney mentioned that in one of our classes, we spent the last 2.5 months reteaching what was supposed to have been learned last year. That's great that our teachers took the time to do that. And we are seeing results from that. But that just gives you insight into how challenging this is. There's always some regression over the summer. We all know that, we all accept it, and we know how to address that in September. But we've never had regression from a pandemic. We've never had this long period of time where students were not in the classroom interacting with their teachers. And at the end of the day, everybody I've spoken to, everybody on this board believes that that interaction between the teacher and the student is critical and the most effective thing we can do. So I'm encouraging our students and their parents to talk about this, to come up with a plan on how their child, our students, can take advantage of the opportunities we are presenting. Because I truly believe that if our students get in front of our teachers outside the normal class period, through tutoring, through the learning hubs, do some work online, take advantage of those resources that are out there, I think this district will come roaring back and see great success. But unless we work cooperatively, unless we establish a plan where I sit down with my child and say, okay, what days are you going to be in the learning hub? What days can you come in before school? What days can you stay after school? Have you gone to the Khan Academy to learn this concept that you're struggling with? And work with them and monitor them and support them. Our teachers will do the same. And I think at the end of the day, we'll be successful. So I thank Dr. Charney for being frank and demonstrating to everyone the challenges we're facing. But I also, just like Dr. Charney know, we have excellent teachers who are dedicated to making their students successful. And we will work with those teachers and the Homedale students to make sure they are successful. That concludes my report.
Thank you very much, Dr. Seitz. A harassment, intimidation, and bullying report. Do we have anything for this evening?
There is no action this evening, but as the board knows, in December, we will have three HIBs for the board to consider.
All right. So we're now going to move to committee reports. Who would like to volunteer to go first? All right. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
The Curriculum and Instruction Special Services Committee met in person on Tuesday, November 9th at 9:15. The following agenda items were discussed. Recommendations for approval. The committee discussed items recommended by the interim superintendent for approval, including but not limited to approval of out-of-district travel for district personnel, field trips, and new textbooks in AP language course. Special services. Carolyn Lorano presented special services recommendations for approval, including but not limited to home hospice instruction, urine drug testing and medical clearance, student placement, revised community-based instruction and structured learning experience for the 2021-2022 school year, and the nursing plan for the 2021-2022 school year. Special services discussion. Carolyn Lorano updated the committee on the incoming special services director, Amanda Lamolia, who will be starting January 1st. Ms. Lamolia is visiting the school 2 days in the next 2 weeks and will also be attending the upcoming CPAC meeting, which is currently being scheduled. The New Jersey Coalition for Inclusive Education, NJCIE, trains teachers how to follow IEPs and make proper accommodations, which should be made by the ICR teacher as well as the lead teacher. The district is currently in the process of applying to participate with the NJCIE, which is funded through a memorandum of understanding between the NJDOE and Montclair State University. The acting director believes this funding will directly support the district's child study teams and teachers of students with IEPs. New AP textbook. The 12th grade AP language and composition textbook will be used in the current course year. High school tech credit versus performing arts credit. There's a 50-50 split between students on the preference if graphic arts should be a performing arts or tech credit towards graduation requirements. Dr. Charney is petitioning the county to see if we can get two different sections, one art focused and one tech focused. Questions were asked about what to do if there are not enough students to enroll to support two different sections. High school guidance. A meeting between the administration and the guidance department took place last week. The guidance department was tasked with looking at 3 to 5 school districts with a comparable counselor load to come up with expectations they should be able to meet. Dr. Charney presented a calendar of events taken from another school district as an example and template. The administration and guidance plan to meet again to review guidance created goals and add the administrator's expectations. Administrators expect counselors to meet with students 4 times a year to create a calendar of expectations that envisions large group meetings, such as unit lunch, and maintain a log of student visits to track trends. Tech coach / co-librarian position. Dr. Charney presented a proposal by Karen McConnell, Supervisor of Technology, Engineering, and Media Arts, to create a position that is half tech coach and half co-librarian at the SAT school. Currently, there is no media specialist librarian at SATs. As a tech coach, this person would help faculty and staff use technology such as Freckle and Study Island. As a co-librarian, they would push into social science and English classrooms to instruct students about proper research and methodology. High school math oversight and web assign. Concerns were raised about numerous parent complaints about high school honors algebra 2 class. The administration is aware of the concerns and is directly addressing the issues. The computer program WebAssign can only be used for homework and can no longer be used for assessments because of its inherent structural deficiencies. Mitigating learning loss. This is where we're going to go over what Dr. Cherney was talking about in the presentation. In high school, ESSER II funds will be used to have math tutors available 5 days as well as unit lunch in established academic centers of the secondary schools. The ESSER III grant, which the district is currently applying for, will be retooled to put more money to secondary school students for these academic efforts and SEL needs. In addition, in the high school and SATs, there are plans for students exhibiting learning loss to meet a number of periods after school. These programs will be scheduled to meet before sports, and students are strongly encouraged to attend. In Village and Indian Hill, two teachers are pushing into classrooms to work with teachers to set individual goals using goal book. There are approximately 45 students in each of these two elementary schools that attend a zero period for each for help in math and ELA. The K-6 math and reading supervisor is working with instructional coaches and teachers to come up with targeted interventions. The administration expressed concerns about the low number of students attending extra support classes to mitigate learning loss. For the summer program, only half the students invited attended the program. The administration and the board want to stress the importance of students attending support sessions to make up for learning loss. If a student is missing key foundational concepts in math, it will be difficult for them to successfully move to the next course level. Data overview, fall 2021. Dr. Charney presented and interpreted the fall data overview that will be presented to the board meeting at this meeting. The presentation included data on Start Strong, ELL, DLM, AP, and SAT results. Parents and guardians are strongly encouraged to have their children attend extra support sessions to make up for pandemic learning loss. The next meeting is Tuesday, December 7th at 9:15.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any questions for Elizabeth?
Yes, I have a question or just a comment or a clarification. Regarding the ESSER funds and the grants, as it relates to the learning, I'm not quite clear on the vernacular you used. I use tutoring hubs, but whatever the vernacular is, can we just confirm that Dr. Cherney isn't confined to the scope of a grant or a grant that's being applied for and has the flexibility from a financial standpoint to do what needs to be done? He indicated Dyer indicated it's an emergency, and this may not even be an issue, but I'm hearing that you're working within the confines of a grant and you're applying for an additional grant. So I wanted to confirm, is that true or not? And if so, what's the actual budget that you require? Is it within the current grant? You know, yes, no. And if not, how much additional funding do you need now? And if it's funding that's not within the normal budget, do we carve out an emergency resolution for the educational health and welfare of the children to get this done now, instead of cycling out? So any of those questions, can we tie that down so folks know whether or not this is going to be properly funded or we're going to have a great concept hobbled by funding issues? That's the question I have. I think the parents would want to know as well. Maybe Dr. Cherney or whomever, maybe perhaps Mike, Mr. Petrizzo. Basically, how much money do you need? How much is in the grant? And are you confined at all from financial issue, and to what extent is that? What's the delta, and how do we fund it for you? And do we need to pass an emergency resolution for that from a finance standpoint?
I can answer the question about the budget. I'm worried about you
Okay, so to Terrence's question about funding, we have approximately $235,000 for the ESSER II grant to fund our instructional needs. And normally these grants are restricted. You can't supplant existing programs, but for the pandemic, these grants have suspended that requirement. So they're pretty open as to how we can use them. The ESSER III funding is $750,000. And much of this money we could divert to learning loss programs. So again, that grant is not restricted, to my best of my knowledge, of any supplanting requirements or there are some requirements. We're working on the grant as of yet. So I would say to your question that we don't really need the funding from the school budget at this point, that the grants that are available from the federal government are sufficient to meet our needs. But again, I use the word, the only reason that we have this kind of money available is the problems are dire, and that's across the nation. And so the state of New Jersey is implementing these funds to immediately meet the learning deficiency. So again, I don't believe that we need school budget funds to meet our concerns at this point. That may change though.
And just to clarify, thank you for that. That's great. The 750 grant, is that awarded or yet to be applied for?
It's yet to be applied for. It's due the 24th, is it?
And what's the turnaround time for the grant? I'm trying to find, say you have a great number of interested folks that want to help out and you're ready to ramp this up and it's full on in 2 weeks. Do you have the funding for it or are you still waiting for funding?
So the pragmatics are we can divert some of the unused funds for ESSER II to the so-called learning hubs, academic centers. And the reason we can do it is we only had half the number of students show up to our summer step up. So those funds are underutilized. So we can now divert those to program and resources. But we do feel that in applying for the ESSER III, there should be not a large gap between funding needs. So I'll keep you tuned, but you know, these both Ms. Rubel and myself, as well as the supervisors, work on constructing these grants. And so presently, we're just starting for the ESSER III.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Aline, you're up.
Sure. Budget and Finance met on November 10th at 7:30. We very briefly discussed the Homedale 2020 referendum, the exterior site additions and renovations, and the interior alterations at SATS and the high school. This project is complete. All documents have been reviewed and approved by the architects and the construction manager, and final payment will be processed this month. So that's exciting. Same goes for the CCTV and the PA system. The project is also complete. All documents have been approved, reviewed and approved. And again, same, final payment will be processed this month. Finally, last part of the referendum is the Indian Hill HVAC controls. The project continues based on the delivery of controls and some other electronics. This, of course, does not impact the use of the HVAC equipment or daily operations, since the current system will remain until this project is complete. So that is really all that's remaining of the Homedale 2020 referendum. The CAFRA, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, the auditors are still working, and they confirmed that the state has extended the filing deadline to February. We've talked now a lot about the ESSER grant that is number 32 on tonight's agenda. So the ESSER grant, the ARP ESSER stands for American Rescue Plan Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief. So you'll probably hear that, you know, ongoing at meetings, and that's what that stands for. The committee reviewed the ARP ESSER grant award that will be included on tonight's budget. Again, item number 32. The committee was provided with an overview of five policies That will be included tonight, and that is the second and final reading of those policies. Our next committee meeting is December 8th at 5 p.m.
Any questions? Do we have any other reports?
Yeah, I'm just going to continue actually with the buildings, grounds, and safety, if that's okay.
Yes, thanks.
That meeting took place on November 11th at 5 p.m. Again, discussed Home Dell 2020 update, which is the same as budgets. They also discussed the comprehensive maintenance plan, which is item 33 on tonight's agenda. They reviewed the maintenance plan in the M1 form, which establishes the minimum amount that the district must spend each year on maintenance. It also establishes the maximum amount the district can have for maintenance reserve as determined by the state formulas. The applicable resolution will be included on tonight's agenda for approval. Similarly, they discussed policies. There are four policies that the committee was provided for review and are included tonight for a second and final reading. The next meeting is December 9th at 5 p.m.
Thank you very much. Any questions involving building and grounds and safety? All right. Thank you very much. No other reports?
Brief report on Labor and Personnel.
Yes, please.
Labor and Personnel Committee met in the last week in the format of Committee of the Whole. For the folks that aren't familiar with the terminology, Committee of the Whole means the full board, not a subcommittee, the full board. And the items that are appropriate for the public are about over a dozen of them are identified in the agenda that's here tonight. So that would be the primary public portion of the report that was reviewed by the folks who attended the Committee of the Whole meeting. And on labor and personnel, we're continuing to meet with the folks with HTAA and HTEA. And this is to identify and resolve and settle a successor agreement. And for the folks that are interested in that side of the house, it should be understood that any HTEA member or any HTAA member is always working under the terms of a contract. They are never out of a contract. They work under a pre-existing contract if one expires, and that stays in force until a successor agreement is reached and ratified. So I just want to make that clear point for the folks in the public or the staff to understand how that process works. There's always a contract, but we're working on the successor agreements. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Terrence. Any questions for Terrence? All right. So now we reach that portion of our meeting where we take questions or comments from the public on action items only. Do we have anyone who wishes to speak? If you could give your name and address, please.
Good evening, Denise King, HTA president. You want my home address?
It doesn't matter. We'll be fine.
Okay. Sure. I live in Howell, 38 Woodview Drive.
Thank you very much,
Denise. Now that everybody knows where I live and coming to visit. What I'd like to do is I'd like to talk about two agenda items, number 25 and number 28. I did send an email prior to speaking this evening to have these items addressed. One is the movement of a secretary from central office down to the SAT school and moving a SAT school employee up to the central office. My concern is that the job was not posted and there was no opportunity for anybody to apply for that position. It seems that it came to my attention that prior to the board meeting, agenda being posted that very afternoon, both employees were spoken to and saying that this was going to occur and that the action item has them moving their position as of November 22nd, which is Monday. So my concern is, one, it wasn't posted, and that was my number one objection. And two, even my custodians get 2 weeks notice before they move to a new location. So I have objections to the turnaround time of that. It's concerning to me that you're moving someone without the opportunity for them to either train in the position and or finish up what they've been working on in their building so that they can pass and seamlessly make it, especially in a school, moving from one position to another. So that's my objection to that action item. My other objection is to this job description for teacher assistant. And I sent to the superintendent as well as the board president and the attorney a copy of the HTA agreement language that talks about instructional assistants as well as paraprofessionals. Now you're creating a job description known as a teacher assistant, which pretty much aligns with those two job descriptions that are currently approved by the Board of Education and are part of the HTEA. My concern is two things. One, teacher assistant in another district is the same thing as our paraprofessionals. We call them monitors, paraprofessionals, instructional aides. In other districts, they're called teacher assistants. It's the same job. No one approached these HTA leadership to negotiate this position. And on your thing, it says, an hourly, as needed, salary be established by the Homedale Township Board of Education, which is outside of the HTA contract. What I'm objecting to is the fact that this is actually an HTA position because it's currently within our contract. It's semantics on the title that you're calling it. We already have employees established within the district that currently do these roles and could do the same role as the teacher assistant. It should say in the event that you're going to agree to this tonight, which I'm objecting to, I asked for it to be tabled until a discussion could happen between the Board of Education representatives and the HTA. It should say salary established in the agreement between the Homedale Board of Education and the HTA, like any other job that is currently an HTA position job. So I'm objecting to it. If we wanted to pull it, discuss it, and be able to establish something, I was told, oh, there's an immediate need. We already have those people in the district. You already have employees that work in the district under the terms and conditions of our contract and do these roles. So if you look at the job descriptions, I actually sent them. I'm sure that Dr. Seitz can share it with the other board members so you can see the contract language for those people who may not know what I'm talking about, as well as the job descriptions that are currently on your Board of Ed site under employment. It says job descriptions. I pulled them today. They're very similar, pretty much the same thing that you're going to be approving tonight. So I'm asking you to remove it, table it to a discussion to occur, or if you're voting on it, you're voting it as part of an HTEA job, because that's pretty much what it is. If you want to name another third or fourth name that we currently have under support staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Denise. By the way, congratulations on your new position with the NJEA. Do we have any other, anyone else wishes to comment on items on tonight's agenda? We have someone remote? Okay. Please identify yourself and your address, please. Okay. All right. Is that person there or? Okay, you need to unmute whoever wishes to speak remotely. All right. If you can't get him, Steve, we're going to move. All right. So we're going to now move to action items. Can I get a motion for items 1 through 37?
Move.
Second.
Roll call. Oh, a discussion. No discussion. Roll call, Michael.
Mr. Sockel.
Yes.
Mr. Reddy.
Yes.
Mrs. Benoit.
Yes.
Mr. Wall.
Yes.
Mrs. Urbanski.
Yes, except on resolution 29, I'm a no on number 8.
Mrs. Zhang.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you, Michael. We're going to be adding an item 38 as a slip sheet to the agenda, and I will read that item before the public. Approval of settlement agreement with student 69377-40815. Whereas claims have been made against the Homedale Township Board of Education in anticipation of litigation with said student 69377-40815, and in accordance with the transcript of proceedings which occurred on November 4th, 2021 under agency reference 2022-33428, and whereas the Homedale Township Board of Education has agreed to resolve all issues pursuant to the terms reviewed by the Homedale Township Board of Education in executive session on November 17, 2021. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Homedale Township Board of Education authorizes the board president to sign the agreement on behalf of the Homedale Township Board of Education. Do I have a motion?
Move. Second.
Discussion? Roll call.
Mr. Sarko.
Yes.
Mr. Reddy.
Yes.
Mrs. Brunelli.
Yes.
Mr. Wall.
Yes.
Mrs. Urbanski.
Yes.
Mrs. Zhang.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Do we have any old business for the board? Do we have any new business for the board?
I have something.
All right.
I'm going to take this off. You know, we talk a lot about student stress, and I hear about it from the class representatives. And I know when we did our superintendent search and they talked to the high school students, the thing that they talked about a lot was understanding how much stress they're under. And I think about this a lot, and you know, how can we as a board help the high school students deal with stress? And one of the things I've been thinking about lately is the amount of time, a lot of times it gets to the end of the semester and you don't have your papers back, you don't have very many grades, and suddenly it's like 2 days before you might get a paper that has been 3-4+ weeks before it's returned. You don't have time to, maybe you didn't do the best job. You don't have time to make up for it. And I think this contributes a lot, like not getting work returned in a timely manner in which you can have agency and do something about it is a factor in student stress in high school. I mean, I've seen it with my children. And I was wondering, can we as a board propose a policy about how long it can be before assignments are returned? Just like, you know, we have a policy about how that how soon an email has to be responded to. And I was wondering if, can we look at peer districts of high performing school districts and see if they have policies on how long it would be that for graded work to be returned? Because I've talked to people I know who are teachers and they've said in their school district, they do have policies. So I was wondering if this is something that can be looked at by the administration as a way to help alleviate some of the stress in high school.
Lee, did you have any comment on that?
That certainly is a valid concern, and we can certainly propose a policy to the Curriculum Instruction Committee for their consideration. And if we can come to some type of agreement, we can move forward to the board for consideration. We can do that at your next meeting.
That would be good. I'd like to know what other peer districts, what is an appropriate amount of time, what is appropriate expectation, rather than us just coming up with something that is either too long, too little, or not fair, or whatever. You know, so maybe doing a little research at what others are doing.
Sure.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Do we have any other new business?
Yeah, I would just like to say I completely agree. I think students knowing how they did on certain assessments and how they're doing the class, the sooner rather than, you know, closer to when grades are due and closer to when the semester ends, would definitely help alleviate that stress that they have.
Thank you. Any other new business? All right. We're going to open up to questions or comments from the public. Please give us your name and address.
All right. It's Dr. Edward Liu, 9 Seminole Drive in Homedale. So I wanted to talk about some of the things I'm seeing in the hospital. I'm a board certified infectious disease doctor at Jersey Shore Medical Center. I actually spoke last month.
Yes.
So we're seeing upticks in terms of numbers still. I'm involved with the monoclonal antibody infusions, and we're maxed out at 16 infusions a day. So I don't want people to be lulled into a feeling that COVID is leaving. I see that we had some numbers in our elementary school. I'm actually quite impressed that the following week's numbers look much better. Typically what happens is the following week you have double or triple the numbers because that's how it spreads. So I think the quarantine actually worked quite well. So that you'll be to be congratulated that the number didn't increase, because that's almost always what I see. So I just want to remind people that we haven't even hit the holidays yet, right? So we have certain things set. We have mandatory masking. We have some plexiglass barriers. These are important things and have kept our numbers down. And that also will keep our disruptions of our student education down, because what I'm hearing is all the disruptions has interfered with their education. So if you keep on having quarantines, that's going to affect not just the children, the students, but also parents' work and also the teachers and everyone involved in the school system. So I just want to make sure that everyone realizes how important it is to keep up what we're doing right now. Okay. I do recommend and support vaccination for our age 5 and above. It's been approved for that age. I already have my 5-year-old already vaccinated. He's getting a second one next week. So that'll be additional protection and help keep the numbers down and keep the school from being disrupted, because that's the most important thing. We're here to educate the children, and disruptions of this sort that COVID has added has been very hard to deal with, but also has affected their education drastically, as we just saw. So thank you for the time.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Do we have any other individuals who'd like to make a comment before the board? Anyone on our remote? One second, though. Do we have someone remote? We do. Let's get that person first. Go ahead. Please give us your name and address.
Yeah, my name is Justin Bilslin. I'm at 5 Forest Park Court in Helmdale. I want to add to one of the person just talked about not getting grades returned. So two things. One, right, if you're looking at 50% of people needing extra help, I think you're outside of the realm of coming to school before class or after class, because the workload is really high on these kids. And so they are stressed out. And what I'm seeing with my children is that tests are not coming back very quickly, or homework is not coming back very quickly. And that's one of the most important things for learning, is getting that feedback so they know where they need to improve. And it's not, more often than not, it's not happening right now. One of my kids just got done taking quarterlies. He had one test to study from back out of 3 or 4. And so I think this is a major area that's being missed right now.
Thank you very much for your comments. We had now, yes, sir, please. Your name and address, please.
I'm Doug Kahn, 8 Fairmount Road. First of all, I'd just like to thank Dr. Seitz for your closing statement at the last meeting. I wasn't here, but I was listening online. I think you're very articulate on the CRT issue and masks and barriers. And I fully agree with what you said, so thank you. I've been a parent here in Homedale for 30 years. My daughter's moved into the town. My son's most likely to hopefully moving into the town. And in large part, it's because of the school system. What I saw here today is very transparent and open. And I just want to thank you for that. One thing that concerned me was the numbers, as it all concerned you, especially like, I think it was Algebra 1. It was 8% in the green. And the idea of buying in parents, getting them to buy in, I agree with that wholeheartedly. One way that you might do that is there are a lot of us that are retired, and we're either mathematicians or scientists or physicians, and I think we might know a little bit about science and math. And instead of, you know, you take the teachers, I have family members that are teachers in other districts, and I know the stress the teachers are under as a result of what they tell me at the dining room table. So if you get a teacher and you say, you volunteer to do this and we'll pay you X amount, that's great, but that's probably using their free time, whatever that school district calls it. If you get a parent to come in and volunteer, it does a couple things. It helps the student because they're not having to go to their teacher. No fault of the teacher, but there might not be a great relationship with that teacher, or the student might not know if that's the teacher that's in the room tutoring at that time. Or if another teacher's there, they don't know, oh, is that a friend of my teacher? And they're going to talk. But having a parent come in that says, this is how this algebra works, that may be a way of, when you're communicating to the parents, getting them to buy in. You're getting them to come in. And it's not like We don't have an us versus them. I'm not implying that. But we do have a school board. We have administration. We have teachers. We have parents. Basically, those are groups. We can have it as a we. If you get parents to come in, they're mathematicians and they're retired. A lot of us just want to come in and say, hey, I want to do something. I want to contribute something. And maybe they can do that. You'd have to vet the people. You wouldn't have to pay them. It would save you money. You wouldn't have to pay the teacher X amount of dollars. And you would have a sort of a win-win, I think. So I just ask that maybe it's something you guys can consider. And it might be a way of help moving the numbers up, getting the buy-in from the parents, and keeping the school system where we want it to be. That's the reason why I have my kids here. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you have any, I think, Jill, you would want to speak. You just give your name and address, please.
Okay. Jill Perez, 6 Sweet Briar Lane. I just wanted to say thank you. My oldest decided to leave communications and come to hometown. This is her first week back. And I just wanted to say that the guidance department was amazing at making her feel comfortable. She's had a good couple of days, and I really just wanted to acknowledge that. I also like to speak to the point of parental choice. And it was great to see so many familiar faces coming back to the high school. And the hardest part of it was that we couldn't necessarily express that in a masked situation. So I still think it's important to acknowledge the other component that is missing when we think about the academics for our students, because they are 100% important. But having taught middle school for many years as a middle school math teacher, I know the importance of building those relationships and therefore encouraging the students to come and take advantage of that extra help. So if you don't build that relationship, the kids aren't going to come the same way they would if they felt that connection. And that connection does happen with the smile and the reaching out. And I just think that that's a huge part of all of this. And we need to continue to think about that impact on our students. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we have someone online. Steve? So if you could give your name and address, that would be great.
Hi, I'm Chandana Rao at 5 Seven Oaks Drive. I wanted to address a couple of points that were raised during this board meeting. Number one, the math levels were concerning. And I think the proposal, I didn't hear any proposals per se, and I might have missed it, on what the district plans on doing in raising those math levels. I did hear a bit about outside tutoring or Khan Academy, but I think that sort of is, you know, contradictory to the fact that we're paying quite a bit in school taxes. Mm-hmm. And there, you know, for many parents, you know, we look towards the school to help our children. And we, you know, what are your thoughts on things that the school can do during the school hours to help our children do better in math and raise math levels? I believe also to that end, there was one of the speakers mentioned bringing on board retirees or others who are interested in volunteering their time to, you know, give support to teachers. But I think that, you know, many of us would like to see the school help raise the math levels in person rather than sort of shifting the burden to the parents to do it externally. And my third question is on the superintendent search as to the status. I don't believe I heard any discussion unless I missed it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't know if Lee or Jeff wants to reiterate what we said earlier in the meeting about our tutoring. Or if you could, that would be great.
I'll start and Jeff can fill in what I miss. We started this past summer with a program called Step Up, where students were able to come in during the summer and receive small class instruction. We followed that with a tutoring program in the school year that is before and after school. And as was discussed this evening, we're developing what are called learning hubs for each period of the day, so that students who have a study hall or during their unit lunch, they can report to certain areas in the school and receive additional tutoring in the areas of math and English. We also are working with our teachers to make sure they understand where their students are, the fact that they may not be ready for the class they're in because of the deficiencies that occurred due to the virtual and hybrid teaching models, school models that we had to use for the last year and a half, and reteach whatever needs to be retaught before they start the new material. And one example was that in one class, the teacher spent the last 2 months reteaching what the students need to know before they could begin the new material, which starts probably this week or early next week. I did suggest that we do some online information, online sources for our students, for the simple reason that today's students are unique. There were never students like them in the past. And my sense is that they receive a great deal of information via the internet, and they can certainly take advantage of that as one of the many resources that we have for our students here at Homedale High School. But obviously, Homedale High School has to be the keystone of this plan, and we are certainly working within the school day to identify the needs of our students and provide resources, teacher instruction by our teachers. I do like the idea a lot of volunteers helping out. I think that was an excellent idea. And we will continue the Step Up program next summer, and we'll continue the tutoring program as long as necessary to get our students up to speed. And as was mentioned earlier, funding for those programs is coming from the federal pandemic relief funds, which are called ESSER funds. And Jeff, did I miss anything? Okay.
Thank you for the summation, Dr. Seitz. In regards to the superintendent search, it is progressing in a very good manner, and we're very pleased with the progress we've seen so far. Is there any other questions that we have from the public? All right. I see that, Terrence, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I just want to say something very, very briefly. At some point, we have to start talking about folks having some freedom from fear, whether it's Homedale or anywhere else, frankly. And these aren't political comments. The election's over. At the last meeting, I heard tremendous conversation about keeping the kids' masked up, keeping the plexiglass, which, by the way, it's not plexiglass, it's plastic you can buy at Staples. In fact, we should have the whole board set up with these plastic screen so folks can see how absolutely ridiculous it is for these poor kids to be dealing with right now. The governor's sunsetting masking January 11th anyway. I think, though, when you see folks in their car alone with a mask on and maybe a face shield, they're not doing it because they're not afraid. They're petrified because they've been taught to be petrified, because obviously there's no risk if you're in your car by yourself. People that are walking outside in a park alone in a mask and maybe with a shield on too. It's a pandemic PTSD. We're moving, the science says, not the political science, which is what I heard today. And by the way, the folks that come up that say to keep the kids masked and to keep plastic in front of their faces are speaking without a mask on. So get that irony in your mind for a moment. But I think the fear issue is very real. And if we're talking about social and emotional learning, and we're talking about these very tender ages, where folks are feeding fear to families. We're moving from pandemic to endemic. Read the science, that's reality. COVID's not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere. Read the science, pandemic to endemic. So it's not the place to discuss mandates and these kinds of things, and we work within the confines of the DOE, but find me some districts that are putting these little plastic shields in front of these kids. I wanted to bring one today, but I didn't really want to stand out. But I would suggest the board have these plastic Staples $3 shields in front of us so the folks can see how absolutely outrageous it is that children, especially when they're many rows back, are trying to see their teacher It's ridiculous. It's outrageous. And it's adults taking out their fears on children from my perspective, and it's not following science. So the masks are being sunsetted by the governor regardless shortly. I'm not aware of other districts. Maybe there's a couple that have these $3 staples. Maybe it's $2 staples, plastic, like saran wrap that sticks up. It's not plexiglass. Many, many rows back that they can't see. Ophthalmologists saying that there's no vision issue if you're looking through cloudy plastic. These are doctors speaking passionately with no mask on at the last meeting, with no mask on, about how the kids need to be masked up. So my point is that people have to stop fostering fear and stop trying to scare people. It's very scary. But you want to know a scary number? 100,000 people are dead from drug overdoses. We've had the highest count of drug overdoses, I think, in our history. You want to talk about death? There's a number for you. So we need to stop and be thoughtful, especially with this incredible new generation coming up, and stop scaring them. And think about, from a curriculum standpoint, and just wrapping up here, from a social and emotional learning standpoint, whatever the tools and techniques that are useful to help empower folks to start moving beyond the legitimate fear and move into that new reality of what the scientists are saying is an endemic issue, and get back to normal and start acting that way. Thank you.
Thank you, Terrence. All right, if you'd like to make a quick comment, please give us your name and address.
My name is Mindy Kim Liu. I live in 9 Seminole Drive, Homedale. I wasn't going to speak today, but I'd like to address and respond to Mr. Wall directly.
If you have to
speak. Yes, I'll speak to you, but I'll address
to you. Do you wear your mask?
No, I'm not. You know why? Because the science says that if you're 6 feet apart,
so it's okay.
Then it's okay. If you read the science, I don't know what you read, but if you read the science, a doctor was here standing in front of us, warning us about not to relax on the masks and not to relax on the plexiglass. I know that Mr. Walls has no science background. He's a businessman. He has a business administration certificate.
Okay, I want us not to
I'm addressing
yes.
the fact that a Homedale school has a board of education member who has spent 3-4 minutes talking about anti-science and how the prevailing scientific views about the pandemic is all false.
I didn't say that, ma'am. I did not say that, ma'am.
He has said that plexiglass does not work. It's a joke.
It's not. It's
okay. I'm sorry. Hold on 1 second. I know. I want you to be able to speak.
Yeah.
Be honest, please.
1 second, Terrence. I would like you to be able to speak, but I want you to change the way that you're presenting information to represent your opinion rather than attempting to establish your opinion of where Mr. Wall is coming from a standpoint of his science background or any of his statements. His statements stand on its own. You may make statements that stand on your own. I just don't want to have a ongoing dialogue between the two of you here in this session.
I respectfully would like a chance to speak on this issue because obviously this issue is a centerpiece right now. There's a battle going on in major all throughout the United States, as you and I know, where parents are, this anti-science movement has taken a grip. For the most part, I have ignored them, as most parents have. You have never seen me here before. I'm only here because I have a kindergartner in school, and I feel driven to protect him because I feel that it's gotten to a point in this neighborhood that it's a real threat to the superintendent and pressure on the Board of Education to change, to remove safety guards that we've invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in, up to $1 million. Well, hundreds of thousands of dollars to protect our kids. There is a pandemic. We have just learned in presentation for an hour. The doctor tell us about how the kids have missed learning for 18 months and have it's devastated them. It naturally would if you're not learning for 18 months, but remotely. right? And we don't want that to continue. We want the schools to stay open. Ironically, the same parents who did not believe in wearing masks were the same parents who I know demanded that the schools reopen, despite the fact that there is a deadly virus and teachers were scared, staffs were scared, kids were scared to go back. I teach, I'm a lawyer by background. I'm an attorney in New Jersey and New York. I've put that aside to raise my kid for 5 years, and I'm a substitute teacher because it's flexible as of now. I travel all the way to Woodbridge, New Jersey, to Pearland, New Jersey, to right here in Middletown and Mattawan. I have not seen a single kid complain about masks. My five-year-old wear masks for 7 hours a day. So where is this complaint? Besides the parents, and the plexiglass is scientists, CDC and other scientists recommending that that's additional safety measure in addition to wearing mask, in addition to staying 6 feet apart. And the plexiglass is a layer of protection so that when you're not, you don't have a mask on and you're close by, that could be an extra protection in case you sneeze or laugh or talk. You're spitting things out all the time. That's a known fact. It could be funny looking. It could be a little, you know, 3 feet by 6 feet thing, but it serves the purpose to block droplets of water that may carry COVID. Our numbers, according, I wanted to thank Dr. Seitz as well, to render a conclusion based on science with the interest to protect our kids, teachers, and staffs in order to keep our schools open. That's of a paramount importance. The kids really at risk here are the seniors and the junior kids who ran out of time to catch up and learn. The younger kids might have greater time, but what are the seniors and the juniors going to do? Okay, we have to talk about how to keep the schools open from now on for the next 2 years and not talk about removing safeguards because that doesn't make sense. If that helps a little bit to keep the kids focused and learning, that's fine. And I've said here last time that one solution, if we are in agreement that the priority is to keep the schools safe, and we know that the plexiglass is important, it serves a purpose to fight COVID, Delta right now. Delta is all the, it's what's happening. So then we could rearrange the tables all around the walls so that some parents say their kids cannot see in front of the plexiglass or through layers of plexiglass, then rearrange it. Can we speak to the teachers and ask them to rearrange it or to cut down fewer rows of kids so that they wouldn't see through so many layers of plexiglass, there would just be two rows? Is that possible, Dr. Seitz? That you speak to the teachers to possibly rearrange the class desks and seats? Oh, sure. Okay, so that's one recommendation, I think. You know, it's just mind-boggling, and it's completely inappropriate and disconcerting that after three doctors here spoke last week, and one doctor spoke about how he's seeing the spike numbers going up, and that there's a holiday coming up, holidays where people congregate, people move, millions of people move around the United States, and this is a pandemic, meaning that something that happens in India is going to come here. Something that happens in Switzerland is going to come here. So obviously, if something that's going to happen in one family, if one family is unmasked, then it's going to affect all of us when they're in school because we all share the same school. We all share the same supermarket and the same town events, et cetera. So we can't have some people wearing masks and other people cannot. Some parent here today said, we want parental decision. That would be great if it's like, you know, what you want to wear for jersey or something. This is a pandemic. This is a communal worldwide disease that's highly infectious. We have to read the science. It's been 2 years over. We have to be at least on the same page to say, well, you know, what should we do? What, you know, when should we get the vaccine? Should we get the vaccine? You know, we have to be at least on the same page. This is like talking, you know, I want to eat orange, but I want to eat broccoli. Like they're not the same. We're not even on the same page. Like what? We have to, at least if you want to be on the board, you have to read what is the prevailing science in the CDC. We have to communicate. It's mind blowing that anybody can be anti-science sitting on the Homedale Board Education member. We have to wake up.
Excuse me, I'm not I'm not anti-science. I'm not allowing that to stand. I'm not talking about him.
Well, okay.
Whoever else, I know that some people are absent today. And the last time, I think it's important
probably not to make accusations against any board member about being anti-science.
Oh, I'm not making accusations. Right. It's what I heard in person.
I understand.
The person who's anti-plexiglass. I would just say, you know, that you're making a decision that affects 10,000 students and tens of thousands of families. We're in the middle of a very serious disease, and hopefully good things will come out. There is a drug that some people are saying that that could be, that will, well, there's more drugs coming out that will fight Delta. And hopefully we will be able to be in better agreements about what to do. But until then, I really beg all the board members, Dr. Seitz, to please adhere to science. This is not taking away parents' choice, but it's how we all can survive to talk about it later. Just wanted to mention one thing that I did not get to talk about last time, which is that there is a New Jersey Governor Executive Order 251, and it says that everyone must wear masks inside schools, all public, private, parochial, et cetera, must maintain a policy regarding mandatory use of face masks by staff, students, visitors in indoor portion. Otherwise, they are in violation of penalties. I wanted to just say that, you know, for parents who are against masks, this is not the forum. Dr. Seitz and the board are under mandate. There's a law that the governor set, 251, to wear masks. If they have issues, please take it to the lawmakers in the state and federal level where they can do something about it. Please do not waste the board education's time to talk about mask or no mask or plexiglass or no plexiglass. Please, they have important, urgent matter at hand where we have seniors and juniors about to graduate, about to take SAT tests. How are they going to score? Now, if everybody across the whole United States do bad, that's the only salvation. That if they do a little bit better, then they can have a legs up. If they have the parents who have resources to provide tutoring, et cetera, but they're in real trouble. Please cut this nonsense and let's focus on delivering quality education. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your thoughts. We are not going to be going into executive session. So I will, at this moment, entertain any motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
We'll see you all later.
Bye.